Welcome back to Sound Pollution.
Welcome back, good people. Come on in. Take off your pants. Let us show you around.
I can't.
You can't what? Show us around?
You're going to get canceled. It's fine. I don't even care anymore. The world's on fire.
So, did I tell you a story? I told you last week, I told you a story about Jacob. So, this week, I'm going to tell you a story about Megan. Megan is my oldest girl.
Okay.
And so, Megan is a little bit of a firecracker. There are people that you've met that there are similarities as far as firecracker-ishness.
Okay. Okay.
So, this was when she came over, and she is pretty little kid, probably like 4 or 5. And she was she goes, "Dad, can I have a snack?" And I go, "Yeah, you can have some goldfish." And she's like, "No, I want candy." And I was like, "No, you can have goldfish." And she's like, "No, I want candy." And she started losing her mind. And then she said it one more time. And I was like, "Okay." And I want to be taller. So then she looked at me. She thought for a second. And she said, "So we're having goldfish."
Okay.
Do you see why that's funny? She was like, "Well, Dad's not getting taller. So it looks like it's goldfish."
That's how it is. She's funny. I haven't met her yet. Good times.
Good times. Great taste. Good beer.
So for our new listeners that we picked up last week from the Michael Sweet interview, our podcast mainly focuses on independent musicians that are up and coming. We do sneak some folks in there. We've had Michael Sweet, Art Edwards. And tonight we have Cherry Chubb from Kentucky. If you go back a little bit, a few episodes, you will find a YouTube show that I did with Moody's Music and Recording. And she was one of the guests on that show. So we're really excited to have her here with us today.
Oh, my God, we are.
We are. Did you listen to the tracks?
I did.
Technological issues, you poor thing.
Yeah, I don't know if you listen to any of our previous podcasts, but since we've come back, something is always fucked up with my side. Always. Every time.
Good.
No. It's not good.
I like it. Feel better. I'm pressing the button and it's just like, "Oh, you want this? How about 15 pop-ups?"
Oh, you have a virus in your computer.
Yeah, you need to stay off of Pornhub.
Dude, I haven't touched this laptop in like 5 years. I think that's the problem.
You should just
use my phone.
No, well, we can hear you just fine.
Yeah, we can hear you just fine. And your circle looks great.
Well, good, good. I love that for you.
Do you know what you need to do with this computer when we're done?
I told Sean I was going to bust up an old guitar onto the laptop.
No. You do that, but you take the laptop out into a grassy area like that movie Office Space and you put on the gangster rap in the background and you just record it, and then you go back and you slow-mo that footage and then re-put the music, and so it's like, damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
The guitar
will break. Oh, that'd be beautiful.
And then you stream it on all your social platforms.
Yes, sir.
Hashtag fuck this computer.
All right.
I'm done with it.
She has been featured on the Acoustic Red Couch Sessions. She's known as an outstanding vocalist with unmatched work ethic and a multitude of original songs that totally kick ass. Please welcome Cherry Chubb.
Woo!
Oh, I feel so much better.
It's so anticlimactic for me and her because we've been interrupting you for 15 minutes.
I know. Kind of reminds me of something. But anyway, you have a very good and long, pretty long life of a music career, in my opinion, you know, in my humble opinion, which doesn't matter anywhere, anytime, anyhow. But I'm going to go ahead and say that. So my question is what keeps you moving forward in your music career, and how do you keep it fresh for yourself and your listeners?
Well, I guess what keeps me going is the what if. Like, yes, this shit is really, really hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I want to quit every day. Like, honestly, just keeping it real. But the what if question, like, what if I do and I hate myself? What if I do and I'm unhappy? What if I do and someone else gets my opportunity that I wouldn't have gotten, you know, if I had just kept on pushing and kept on going? I really think that's all that keeps me going, because not to talk shit about my crowd or the venues, but like my very last show that I had, I played a 3-hour set. And I busted my tail doing it. I was losing my voice. You know, this weather's been up and down. I was losing my voice the whole show. My husband had to go to the gas station and buy me cough drops. And Aww. It was like a whole thing. And I was really trying to get through it and do my best. Because what if I play a song that sparks a memory in somebody? Or what if I play someone's favorite song? Or what if I do get a reaction at some point tonight? But the whole 3 hours, the only person that clapped was my husband. And I was in a room full of 50 people. Nobody was looking at me. Nobody was paying attention to me. I got no claps. I did get yelled at for not doing enough country. And I did get yelled at for being too loud. Like, oh, sorry.
This is live music. I didn't know I was supposed to whisper.
Like, my bad.
Well, the 50 people not paying attention to you, that pretty much sums up my entire life. So I guess let's just dig another rock layer down.
Right. That.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. You know, and it's those what ifs, like, what if I haven't been married so many times? What if I didn't have so many kids? I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
What's your husband's name?
Sean.
I would like to say something to Sean. Yeah. Sean, you are an awesome dude for going and getting your artist some cough drops. That is very cool.
No kidding.
So thank you, Mr. Sean.
We've been together 7 years, and this dude comes to all of my shows, and he always tells me how many goosebumps he got after each song that he's heard a million times. Like, he's the real MVP, not gonna lie.
He's super nice.
He's super nice.
I got to meet him when she played at Mike's thing, and he is so nice.
Sounds like foreplay to me. Sounds like
yeah,
to me.
Exactly. Thank you, Uncle Brent.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. he keeps me going too. He would never let me live it down if I gave up. I have a lot of people that would never let me live it down, and a lot of people that would be really disappointed if I did quit. You know, there's a lot of factors that keeps me going, none of which are my soul. My soul's burnt.
You're tired.
Yeah.
And how long have you been playing?
I've been playing for 17 years.
You must have started young, because you're younger than me.
Oh, yeah, dude.
That's not too difficult to get, though.
I'm not that old, bitch.
Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
I think that's you redirecting your fear of death towards me.
I'm not afraid of death. I welcome it. I welcome death.
I fear
death.
Nothing.
Death will be a vacation.
No shit.
Shit going down.
I mean, no crap. Sorry, are we allowed to cuss?
Yeah, I mark everything as explicit. I didn't mark the last one as explicit because it was a different kind of music.
Yeah,
so.
Fuck yes. Cuss all you want.
Well, I've always been instrumental, and I've always been singing. Like when I was 5 years old, when they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, which is such a stupid question, by the way, but I always said, I want to be a rock star. And I had this little, you remember when cereals came with treats inside, like a toy?
Yes.
Well, I was like the luckiest kid in the freaking world. I got a Kool-Aid cassette tape that was like the size of your hand in my box of cereal. There was basically no cereal in there because this thing was, you know, the size of your hand. But I cherished that thing, and it had a little tie that you could put around it to carry it around like a strap. And I would pop cassettes in, and I was like, I was a rock star when I was 5. I thought so, you know. But my grandma always played piano. So when I would go to grandma's, which was a lot, I was always at grandma and grandpa's, and she had this piano that her great grandma had, and it's like made of ivory, like legit ivory, and it's super old. We still have it, and she would always play Unchained Melody on it. That was our family song, like our go-to song, and the little do-do-do, little 5-year-old me got that part, and I think I just really enjoyed sitting around with the family and playing, and it sparks this fire in you that is not something you can ever extinguish, no matter how hard you try.
Agreed.
So I guess when my dad got out of prison, he sent me an electric guitar when I was like 10 or 11. He sent it through the mail. And it was like one of those cheap old, you know, first act guitars that you can get at Walmart, which is like, I was like 10. And I was like, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. This is fantastic. And then I was just playing it unplugged because I didn't have anything else. And my mother's father saw how much I was playing with it. And he went on eBay and got me this little tiny no-name amp for like $50. Dude, it was just all uphill after that. I never put it down. Didn't know what the hell I was doing. Had nobody to show me a thing because my mother's not musically inclined. She can't hold a note. But then I saw my dad for the first time after getting out of prison. We were driving down from New York and we picked him up on our way through Kentucky. And it was like 4 or 5 years since I'd seen him. And the whole time, the whole drive back down to Florida, we were singing just the whole time, just sitting in a minivan with no air conditioner, middle of July, just singing. And he taught me so much on that drive. And it was like my childhood all over again. And when we got to Florida, I had my guitar and he showed me how to play Metallica. Those were the first songs I ever learned in my life. Was Welcome Home or Sanitarium by Metallica, freaking the one they do on the Soldier movies. I can't remember what it's called. One. All the good ones. You know, he taught me all of those on guitar, and it was like, holy cow, this is what I want to do. And then I realized I can sing with it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird whenever you have a bump in technical ability, whether it be your vocals or your guitar, because then you actually see, because normally it's kind of hazy when you're looking into your musical future. But when you hit that bump, it's like you get up high enough to see, okay, I can see this in the distance, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of helps you. So that's kind of cool.
It's also an outlet too, you know? Like I had a really, really terribly rough childhood that I'll never get into because it would take hours. But like that was all I had was my music. And there was a point in my life after high school when adulthood just slapped me in the face so fucking hard. And I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. And I was doing it all by myself with 3 jobs, going to school full time, on the dean's list, like doing all the things, all the robot things that we're supposed to do. And my soul just knew it was wrong. So I dropped out. I mean, I was doing really well for myself and by myself, but I dropped out. I couldn't do it. And I haven't been back to school since. I mean, that was almost a decade ago. But during that point of adulthood, I really did not pick my guitar up for almost a decade. I had a whole hiatus where I didn't touch the thing. I always had a guitar, but I never really, I mean, we would play every now and then in high school, my girlfriend and I, and never really wrote anything. I just lost that, you know, that spark after high school. Like our first gig was when we were seniors in high school. We played at Moose Rat Cafe that used to be in Radcliffe, Kentucky. It's since shut down now. It's a chiropractor's office. Which is ironic because I have to go there now because now I'm old. Memories, good memories. But yeah, there was a really long period where I didn't pick up my guitar and I started going to karaoke. Oh my God, it was terrifying. I'd never really sang in front of people besides the talent show in high school and that silly gig we had. And then they started doing open mic there. You know, I started enjoying how I felt singing karaoke because I love singing. Singing is my true passion. I mean, I could give a fuck less if I ever picked up a guitar again in my life because I fucking hate playing guitar now. But it was like, oh my God, I fucking love this. I love singing and people enjoy hearing me sing. And it's just like a rush, you know, the rush. And, so I started doing the open mic and then I realized I can't always do cover songs. So I was inspired to start writing my own music again after almost a decade. So the first song I ever wrote after this decade was the song called Boogeyman. My buddy Mark DeWitt, we would always go over to his house and jam. And I stopped by on my lunch break one time and I just so happened to have my guitar and I was like, hey, would you mind listening to this song that I just wrote? I think you'd like it and I would like for you to learn it with me, you know, because we were jamming together like all the time. And I showed him the song and like his jaw was dropped and he was like, oh my God, that is the best thing I've heard in so long. And I almost cried because it, you know, like I said, it was the first thing I'd written in forever. Well, he just so happened to be going on a radio show in a few hours for 106.5 in Louisville. And he goes, I'm going to this radio show. Can you meet me in New Albany at 6 p.m.? I want you to sing your song on my show. And I was like, no, I can't. I'm on my lunch break. I got to get back to work. You know, by the time I'd get there, it'd be like 8 p.m., whatever. And he said, nah, you got to be there at 6 for sound check if you're going to do your song. And I was like, I can't. I have this fucking shitty ass full-time job. You know, I hate my life. This is bullshit, whatever. I said no. But my soul, my spirit, like every cell in my body, and I'm about to cry talking about this because it was like so bizarre because I'd never experienced anything spiritual before in my life. But something was like, go to fucking New Albany. Get there. Somehow do it. And I did. And I went and I played my song and everybody's jaws were dropped. And it was like this pivotal moment for me. I was like, oh my God, I can share how I feel with everyone else. And maybe they can feel just even like a small little fraction of how I feel when I sang this song and when I wrote this song. And that just, it blew up from there. Like, I've been on that radio show so many times. I've got several gigs a week, every week for the last like 2 years almost. And it just blew up from there. I can't even explain the feeling that I got that told me to do it, but I still have it to this day. And I named it Cherry Chubb.
I was going to ask how you got your name. Excellent answer that I never have asked.
It came to me in a dream on February 11th of 2021. I think it could have been 2022. I don't even know what today is. Let's just go with last year because it feels more recent than 2 years ago. Hashtag ADHD. I had this dream. I was like half asleep. You know, in the morning when you're trying to doze back off, but you're like halfway there. You don't know that. Ah, okay.
No, he's forgotten because he has two small children right now.
Oh, gotcha. That checks. Well, I was halfway from dozing off, and I had this dream, and I'm standing in this like dark abyss, and it's so dark that you can't see anything reflecting off of it, but you can tell that you're in a dimension. Like, I can't explain it. It was kind of trippy, but I was totally sober, I promise. I had work that morning, trust me.
That's still not a good enough explanation. No, that means nothing.
Well, like, I'm standing there and I'm like, dude, where the hell am I? I was just in my bed sleeping, like, because it just felt very real. It felt like it was my actual body was there, even though it was a quote unquote dream. And anyway, this bright light comes out of like the right side of my vision. And it comes from a really high spot and it comes down really slowly and it visualizes in front of me. And when it does, it's me standing there looking at me. She's wearing the same exact thing that I'm wearing as I'm laying there in my bed. And I didn't say anything because I was really stunned. You know, it's very weird when you see yourself. And I've only seen myself twice in my entire life. And this was the second time. The first time she tried to reach me, I was too caught up in my own bullshit to realize what it was. But she forced her way into my dreams and she forced her way to talking to me and telling me this message. Well, she looks me dead in the eye and she's very serious and solemn. She says, you need to name yourself Cherry Chubb. And then I woke up. I sat on it for like 3-4 months. I was like, what the fuck is Cherry Chubb? It sounds kind of raunchy if you ask me.
That's the best part.
Which I found out later. It is a little raunchy. We don't got to say it on the air, but I found out after I had already copyrighted and trademarked the name. Yay me. But I sat on it for a few months and something in my spirit just kept saying, you got to go with it. You got to go with it. Just trust me. So I trusted it. And now people don't forget the name. You know, it gives them, it's like a double tick. They're like Cherry Chubb. You know what I'm saying? And I'm trying to stay positive about the name because I found out what it is. Too little too late. But yeah, that's how I got the name. And she has helped me so much. It's kind of like that persona we had previously discussed.
Your stage persona.
Where you can like switch into this fearsome, like Sasha Fierce mode, you know. It's very helpful with my stage fright because I'm terrified of existing in front of people.
You have started recording your music. We have a few songs to talk about. When was the first time you recorded your own music and what did it feel like?
Yeah, what did that feel like?
It's beautiful. I've been using Community Music Alliance in New Albany, Indiana, nonprofit organization that helps out struggling musicians.
They're great.
Artists. Yeah, very fantastic folks there. I can't say enough about them. And if I ever get famous, all that shit is going to them because I owe them my life. That's where the radio show took place that sparked this whole passion. But I scheduled a session with Owen, the producer, and I really enjoyed his energy. It was a really good transaction. And the first song that we recorded is a song that I wrote for my grandfather who passed away in 2010. It's for him and my grandmother, called And Just Like That. And it's also the only music video I have out currently. It was surreal to go in that booth and record my voice, which I always think sounds like shit. And when you add the music to it, though, and you're not just listening to a solo track of your voice, it's like goosebumps galore. But then we added some harmony vocals, which was just my voice in a different pitch to it. And I'm sitting on the couch and we're listening to the first draft and I'm just a puddle of tears over there on the couch, sitting next to Sean and my producer, just losing my absolute shit. And it was incredible. I can't explain the feeling. It was like, oh my God, this is happening. And I've never wanted anything more in my life. And I'm sitting here and it's happening.
I can relate to that because the first time I recorded a song and listened to it, it was the first time I heard something that was created in here released into the world. So it was pretty overwhelming to me just to know that I could create something and put it out there, and it didn't sound really good, but it sounded good enough for me, and I was just amazed, because, you know, when you're playing by yourself, you know, you're at a bar, you're just you and your acoustic guitar, you can only do so much stuff, you know, whereas when you record a song, you can do a lot more. It can evolve and closer to what it should be. I don't know if songs always evolve into what they should be, but it's an opportunity to do that. So that's kind of a cool thing. So let's kind of jump into My Getaway. I got your track. I liked it, but I had already heard that song because you did it at the Red Couch Sessions. And I'd heard it one other place because I was just going through the internet trying to find information about you. So I had listened to these other versions. So it goes back to that thing I was saying earlier. When you're in the studio, the song can actually grow and become more of what it's supposed to be. So when I listened to the two other versions, I was like, they didn't have like an island feel to them or anything like that, you know, because that song has a cool island feel to it. It's kind of a love song. It's just different from what's online. So it surprised me, which is kind of cool because, you know, when you don't want your live performance and what you're listening to on the MP3 or the WAV file to be the same. Because then why go see anyone live if you're just going to hear the recorded version? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You have a cool tagline in the chorus. I really like that. My favorite lyric, and I don't know if I'm going to get it right, but it's...
I will correct you.
Okay. You do that. You won't be the only one. My favorite lyrics are, so where do we go to see your smile? It's the most precious thing that I've seen in a while. And I just need you to know everything that you do is what I'm into because I love you. I thought that was a good line. It's very sweet. That whole song is like real gushy and stuff.
I don't want to tell you what the song is actually about then because it's going to ruin it for you.
It won't ruin it for me.
Scared to share that because...
Why?
Because that's everyone's favorite song. And they're like, it's so happy. It's so beachy. It reminds me of love and new things and summer and fresh. And I'm like, it is the furthest thing.
but that's what you put out.
Right.
You know, and the way you sing it also supports that. So, you know, it'd be a cool contrast for us that don't have any souls, like me and Ramon.
I feel
wrong.
That.
So you should share it. You know, leave a little out there so people can still hear it and make it their own, but kind of provide a little bit of detail on it so everyone can see why you told me it's not as lovey-dovey.
Well, I think we all struggle with the same things, you know, depression, anxiety, yada, yada. But like that first line, hey, little baby, want to see if we can touch the bottom of the lake with our feet, see how far we can go, you know. It's kind of like a song about, can I say the suicide word?
Yeah.
It is about suicide. It's a song to myself. I'm little baby. I'm the smile, you know, because I love you. It sure would be cool to see you smile because it's the most precious thing that I've seen in a while. Just because, like, that span of depression and how long it takes to get out of it. And I don't even think I have gotten out of it, honestly, maybe, but twice in my life. But that span, it's like, oh, my God, I just want to wake up and smile. I just want to see you be happy. I want to see you feel loved. I don't want to see if we can touch the bottom with our feet. I don't want to drown. I don't want to be gone. I don't want to subside, you know. So I'll leave some surprise to the song, but that's what I'll
say.
So
it's a love song about life.
Yeah, for me, yeah, to me. I've never written a fucking song when I was happy, if that tells you anything at all.
You are not the first person we've interviewed that said that exact sentence and then followed it with a giggle.
Yeah. Hey, Kurt Cobain. He's my main man. Kurt Cobain, if you're going to ask me a question about my inspiration.
That was my next question. So go ahead.
It is that man. I mean, growing up in high school, high school was tough. Nothing compared to what life is, how tough it is now. I thought life was tough in high school because I was just starting to figure out shit. But I rediscovered Nirvana and I just like dived in. It was everything. I learned everything about him. And I realized, I asked myself, I was like, why do you have this, I don't want to say obsession because I'm not obsessed with him. I just have such a huge appreciation. But why do you have this all of a sudden? What's going on? And I realized, like, I'm watching Kurt Cobain's interviews on Dial Up on YouTube because it was back then. And I'm reading the lyrics to a song, but not just reading, I'm interpreting. And I'm like, holy freaking shit. Like, this dude is speaking my diary, like word for word. I mean, I used to speak encrypt all the time. Like, how I started writing songs was via poetry. I mean, I would just write shit that I still have to this day, and it's a nice reminder to go read, but I would just write this random shit that may seem random to you, but when I read it, I know exactly how I felt, I know exactly what I was saying, and I know exactly how Kurt Cobain was feeling, you know, when he says his stuff. And a lot of people think he's just spewing nonsense, but if you really break it down and you know how he was targeted by the media and you know how drained he was literally milked dry. I mean, that's why the man is gone. He was milked dry. And I just related so much to it. And I've never appreciated anything more in my entire life than Kurt Cobain. And obviously Alice in Chains. I mean, we got Lane over there, RIP. Those are my two main gang.
That's so funny because I was going to say, for me, it was Alice in Chains, specifically Dirt.
Oh, yes.
Oh, such a good song.
Every single song they have written is great. There's not a single song that I can punch into Google and listen to and not enjoy. Like, they're all complete bangers. And that's the difference between him and Nirvana. Was like Kurt Cobain was like 50-50 for a lot of people. But since I have this deep, dark appreciation for grunge and hate and anger and, you know, exploiting the government, I have that mad hate that he had. I love every single song he's even written, even the studio ones where it wasn't even a studio. He was just at his house, you know, recording probably into a fucking cassette player.
That's what we had.
The Montage of Heck album is what I'm referring to. That album is my shit. And when I play that on my Bluetooth speaker, when I have guests over, they're always like, do you mind playing something like that we can dance to? And I'm like, do you guys not hear this song? It's fucking incredible. I mean, are you even listening? I never understood, you know, the lack of appreciation for his art. He's my main inspo. I mean, I will never be able to do grunge. You can't replicate what they made. You simply can't. And I can't even get close to it. And it really sucks. But I do, like, my genre, I guess, is gruntry.
Gruntry?
I was going to say, that's not what you were put here to do. You know, if you were, you would be doing it. But you were, you're something different. Musically, this is what you were supposed to create. I think we need to have our artists, but we also need to embrace the fact that no one else can create what we do. No one can create, Cherry, what you do. No one. You know, and that's a real cool thing, regardless of who your influences are. No one else can do that. And so it's good that you're following this. It's good that you have this thing that's pushing you forward and keeping you going. You know, I think a lot of times me and Ronell talk and probably quit music like 50 times a day or, you know, but we always come back to it because it's part
you
of
you always come back to it.
No, you are too. You're still wrapped up in it. You're just, you have some stuff you have to work out and, you know, you come back to it and because it's who you are. So would you tell listeners about your whistling technique? You know, like how, when, and where you started developing this cherry whistle, because I actually watched you whistling and like, you don't whistle like I do. And I was like, that's kind of, you don't do your lips like I do. And so I was like, how is she creating that sound? So can you answer that question?
Holy cow. I don't know if I can. Because I actually talk shit about my whistling on a regular basis. Like every time I play that song live, I'm like, hey guys, you're about to hear the shittiest whistling you've ever heard in your life. And like, I did totally, I was like on the studio version. I was like, I do want to whistle myself because I want to be legit. I want to be genuine. Like you get what you get. It's the raw, it's raw. It's unedited. Like that's just me whistling like a jackass. Cause I don't know how to whistle. I mean, when I first wrote that song, I was down in my basement and it's fucking freezing down there. And the song just like came to me out of nowhere. And I heard a whistle in my, like in my head, I guess. I don't know. It was a soulful song. It was a Cherry Chubb song that she sent to me, but I heard this whistle and I was like, dude, I can't whistle. Do not make me do this. But I tried it and I was like, it sounds like shit, but I like it. So I just ran with it.
Talk about the other song. And correct me if I'm wrong. You played this when I saw you play with at Moody's Music because it sounded really familiar. The Not Necessary.
Yeah, totally.
You did play that. Okay, yeah. That's what I thought. So when I heard you sing the first time, it really surprised me. And I feel like this is the song because it starts out really soft.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's just, there's this, like, I was like, oh, she has a pretty voice and she's playing the guitar really well. And you had the cymbals on your feet.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. And I actually was thinking to myself, I wish I could do that. But that's just way too much. Like, that's everything has to do something else. There's no fucking way.
It's a lot.
And then as I was thinking that, you picked your whole, you like changed the whole song an octave. The whole song went up an entire octave. And your voice just, it almost changed. It like genuinely blew me away. And I think the song is a great representation of that. What is the story behind it?
Side note. So when you see that shit, that's Cherry Chubb coming out. Cause Amber always starts the show, but Cherry Chubb always finishes it. She always has the last word. And I just like, I'm such a control freak, but I got to let her have the reins because she's really good at ratting. that song is, oh my God, I love that song. Means a lot to me. I didn't know what it was about at first. It like writing music for me is kind of like therapy. You know, you start writing shit down and you're like, oh my God, pivotal moment, revelation. I'm sad again. Boo hoo. Oh, I'm happy. You know, it's like a whole roller coaster when you're writing a song. But after I wrote that song, I was like, what exactly are you getting at? Like, what was the goal with this? Did you have a goal? You know, what were you thinking? And I realized the song is about, I always joke at shows, but I'm like, hey, this is for all you motherfuckers that have mommy and daddy issues. And I guess that's the song in a nutshell. Like if you listen to the lyrics, it's talking about how it doesn't really matter because they never really like gave a fuck. You know, they never even listened, talking about mom and dad and all that fun jazz. It's hard to get into. Because I don't fully understand it myself, but I think we all have it, you know. Parental trauma is quite present all around us. They didn't know what the fuck they were doing, and we don't either.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Being a parent kind of sucks sometimes, and it's difficult on top of that, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah, I
can't even imagine.
I can totally relate to both sides of the story. I think Not Necessary for me was my favorite song. It's has a long, dark intro to me, and it's almost classical in nature how it's played. You use the explicit word very well. The cool keys part, I really enjoyed the keys part, but you have
organ.
You have great vocal fry because you started pushing it and you're crackling a little bit there, so I really enjoyed that. And then my favorite lyric is I don't think you know exactly who you're dealing
with. Who you're fucking with.
Yeah.
I love that line.
Yeah, the busted lip was like, I was like, that is so freaking cool. What's your recording process like after you've written a song? I'm guessing that you have specific steps you've taken. Even if you've only recorded once, you have a process you do. Can you provide a little insight into that?
It's is quite the opposite. I have no fucking process, and it's extremely stressful.
That's what makes it a process, then.
I guess, yeah. It's like I know exactly when I'm going in a studio, and I have all this time to figure out how I want it to sound and what instruments I want to fill in and what I'm going to do with it and where it's going to go. And I get so overwhelmed by all the opportunities because, you know, when you look at art, there's so many different ways that you can interpret it. And who's to say which one is the right way? And it's so much pressure because I know I could have done so many other things with that song. And it's like they all would have sounded great because that song means a lot to me. No matter how it sounds, it's going to be beautiful. But every single time I've gone to the studio, and I've been to the studio, like my producer probably hates me, but we're practically roommates at this point. Like I'm there all the time. It takes like not necessary. I think took at least 22 hours, at least just the one song, because I was like, I had no idea what I was going to do. I walked in and Owen says, "All right, Cherry, so what are we going to do?" And I was like, "I don't know." I panic. I'm like, I don't know what to do. We have 3 hours. It's too much pressure. And I implode. And so I'm like, how about we just get the raw basics down? Let's get the rhythm and the vocals. We'll go from there, you know? And then that's where I go. We play the rough track and I'm like, okay, I hear this. Let's try this. So I'll go get another instrument, or I'll hire somebody to come in and do it. Or Owen is extremely talented and he has all these different sounds on his keyboard and stuff. And we just try it. And I'm like, nope, I don't like that. And that's why it takes so long, is because I'm like, nope, I don't like that. No, no, no. Yes, that's beautiful. But it takes like so many sessions to get to that point. And it's really tough because I just get overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. I know that there's so many different things that I could do, and choosing the right one and saying whether it's the right one or not is quite difficult.
Yeah, it is overwhelming. The whole process is overwhelming.
I don't mind it being raw and confusing because it always turns out in the end. So I try not to fret too much about it because I will stress myself out to the point of panic if I think too much about it and I can't come to a conclusion. So I just go in there with an open mind and I'm like, let's just fucking do this thing. Let's get it done. Let's pop it off. We got ears to feed, you know?
Thank you.
Where can people find your music?
I am on all streaming platforms, Spotify, YouTube, Pandora, Apple, Amazon. I'm on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all the things.
I'd
rather you just show up at my house like a weirdo and have a glass of wine with me.
Don't do that. Bren will do it. We had another gentleman on here not that long ago where that was the running joke. He was like, I'm in your yard.
That's so funny. Aren't you in Texas, dude?
Yeah.
It'll take you a little while, but I expect you to show up prepared.
And where are you playing? Do you have any shows coming up in like the next couple months?
Oh yeah, huge news. I'm finally in a band. Yeah, my band has our very first show this Saturday at Artie Ray's in Vine Grove, Kentucky.
This won't be out by that day. What do you have after that?
Let me pull up my schedule here.
Yeah, pull up that calendar.
April 29th in Louisville at Pivot Brew Lou, May 5th, May 6th, May 12th, May 13th, May 21st, June 3rd, you name it, I'm all over. If you follow my Facebook, you can see all the events if I remember to make them.
All right, final question. What advice would you give a new singer-songwriter?
That is so hard because I'm such a pessimist.
Be honest. It wouldn't be the first time we heard, don't fucking do it.
I don't want to say that. What I would say is to lower your expectations and be extremely kind to yourself throughout the whole process and to not forget why you started.
Okay.
But lower your goddamn expectations because you will never meet them or exceed them and you will always be disappointed.
It's kind of like that dating thing. Why don't you call me when you're ready to compromise?
Never.
But I wouldn't say don't do it. You know, if you enjoy
it. But go into it as like a realist.
Yes. Because it's not all glamorized like you see in the movies. It's nothing like you expect. So if you lower your expectations, you don't get disappointed. And that's something that I struggle with 24/7. I will say there's some nights I go to a show and I'm like, fuck it. Nobody's even going to be listening. No one's going to clap. Why am I stressed out right now? Why am I having such anxiety? Just forget about it. Just let Cherry Chubb take over and do her goddamn thing and shut up about it.
And you have your best show ever, right?
Literally. Like I'm up there dancing while I'm sitting down on my ass singing, you know? Yeah. I mean, it sounds shitty to say that, but lower your expectations. Seriously, life is too short to constantly feel like a failure to your own self. You know, that's how I feel. I mean, I wake up every day and I put my clown makeup on, but at the end of the day, dude, wipe that shit off. Be real. Just do you. And if that's not enough for you, nothing ever will be.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Pollution Podcast. Please remember to like, follow, subscribe, download, and share.
Thank you for showing up. We have some cool stuff coming up. So if you could, you know, not only download, like, and subscribe, but also create your own Sound Pollution playlist on YouTube or Spotify because we're there. Mm. And create your own playlist and play it 24/7 a day. Just play it. Play the crap out of it.
Just turn the volume down on your phone. Keep it playing.
Keep it playing.
That would be great.
Because that will help the artist, and it will also help us. And God knows we need help.
Whatever help you're willing to provide at this point, we'll take. And the email is soundpollutionpodcast@gmail.com.
That's an awkward silence that will be taken out.
Nah, I think I might leave that one in because they felt me and you lock eyes and go, yeah, that's exactly what I meant.
Oh, God, that's funny.
Okay, everybody, get out there and make
some noise.